Today's Dhamma is the Four Noble Truths, the very core of the Buddha's teaching, the essence, what people know about Buddhism or hear about Buddhism when they first begin to learn about the Buddha's teaching. Noble, the word noble comes from the Pali Arya. Arya is a word that in modern times was adapted to refer to people who are consider themselves supreme over other races. So it was a racist and unwholesome usage of the word. But in India as well, in the time of the Buddha, it was used in a similar way. It was used by the people who invaded India, or the people who controlled India at the very least, and used to designate themselves as superior to their enemies. By the time the Buddha came around, it was a generally used term that was used to refer to someone as being noble. And the Buddha, of course, had his own idea of what it means to be noble or high or supreme. The commentaries give us a definition of the word as ariya, ya meaning far from, and ari meaning enemies, which is, I guess, possibly the etymology, meaning someone who is superior or victorious, someone who is a winner because they have surpassed their enemies. But of course, in Buddhism, enemies mean something different from what it would mean to a war-making race. In Buddhism, the enemies are within us. Nonetheless, the word Arya designates that these are a special group of truths that truly, when one understands them, make one supreme or special by understanding them. And with the idea that it relates to being victorious over the enemies that are within us, the causes of suffering. Truth is an important word to spend a little bit of time explaining, because there are two kinds of truth, of course. There are truths that are conventional. So you can only say they're true in the context of understanding the terms, and they can be challenged. So one group of people might think one geopolitical statement is true, where another group of people would say it is false, and that sort of thing. These sorts of truths can be disputed, they can be misunderstood, and most importantly, they rely on conventions. So Paris is the capital of France, relies on ideas about what is France, what is Paris, what is the capital. And they don't have any bearing in ultimate reality. In other words, you can't go to Paris and find France or Paris. All you will have is experiences. So reality, ultimate reality, has truth on another level. It has truth that is immutable. It doesn't depend on your opinion or your idea. It doesn't depend on your perception. It is an absolute fact, a part of experience. No matter where you go or what you do, you will always be subject to these truths. So putting these two together means there are also truths about ultimate reality and about conventional reality that are not useful, that are not helpful, that do not have any bearing on making you a better person or freeing you from suffering. So these are the truths that are both true in an ultimate sense and have a bearing on your freedom from suffering, that lead you to become free from suffering. Four of them, and these are well known, of course, but there's more to say that is not quite so well known and often misunderstood about them. The Four Noble Truths are suffering, the cause of suffering, the cessation of suffering, or the end of suffering, and the path which leads to the end of suffering. So if you look at them, putting them simply, they are a pair of pairs, no? They are two pairs. So we have suffering and its cause, and then we have the opposite of suffering, which is freedom from suffering, and its cause, which is the path. So this is, in this way, we can see the idea that the Buddha's teaching was very much about cause and effect, very much about the importance of understanding what leads to what, with the idea that when we free ourselves from the cause of suffering, of course, suffering will not arise. But beyond these four, there are actually 12 parts. And the first time the Buddha taught, in the Buddha's first discourse, the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, when he first taught these Four Noble Truths to an audience, he explained these 12 parts, and he said, it's these 12 parts that constitute right understanding. And to understand the Four Noble Truths and to truly have become accomplished and have taken the Four Noble Truths in yourself, it requires understanding of all 12 of these. Now, it sounds more complicated than it is. It's actually three sets of four. And so with each truth, there are three aspects of it. You can look at it that way. Four times three is 12. So for each truth, there is the truth of it, and then the definition of the truth, which I'll explain. Then there is something called the kicca. So in regards to the truth, simply knowing it and having heard it isn't enough. There's something that you must do in regards to the truth. So in the Buddha's teaching, it's a teaching of action, it's not a teaching of belief, it's not a teaching of intellectualism, it's a teaching of practice. And so there are four, you might say, practices or aspects of the practice that need to be accomplished in order to say that you have completely successfully undertaken the or engaged with the Four Noble Truths. That's called the kicca, what must be done. And the third aspect is just the having done the kicca. It's called katta. So satcha means the truth, kicca means the duty to be performed, and katta means the duty having been performed. And the meaning there is to truly become accomplished with the Four Noble Truths, you have to have accomplished the kicca. Once you have done it, then you are at the state where you have completed the practice relating to the Four Noble Truths, and you have come to freedom from suffering. Satcha, kicca, and katta. So, for the First Noble Truth, it's called the truth of suffering. There is the satcha, there is the kicca, and there is the katta, and so on with the others. But for dukkha, the truth of suffering, the truth of it is that there is suffering. The truth is not that life is suffering or that everything is suffering. The truth is that there is suffering. This is the teaching of the Buddha that often gives Buddhism a bit of a bad name. It leads people to think of Buddhism as pessimistic. And to some extent, that says a lot more about the nature of society and ordinary ways of thinking than it does about Buddhism. Our idea that any thought of approaching, discussing, or analyzing, or teaching about suffering is somehow pessimistic. Why? Because the ordinary way is to do everything you can to run away and avoid suffering, to find ways to help yourself forget about and not have to think about things that are unpleasant. Our way of dealing with suffering is to avoid it. But this is not the teaching that the Buddha gave on, this is not dukkha satcha, this is not the truth of suffering. This is called dukkha vedana. How most people look at suffering is called dukkha vedana. They see it as a feeling, vedana meaning feeling. So dukkha is something that you feel. And the solution to dukkha vedana is to not feel it, to find ways to avoid it. When you have physical pain, you adjust your position, or you take medicine, or you engage in some activity that frees you from that suffering. When you have mental pain, you find ways to distract yourself or take medicine to make you feel better, take drugs, alcohol, that sort of thing. Or in any other ways, find ways to distract yourself or avoid the experience. But this is not the way out of suffering, and obviously this is not the solution to life's problems. The second way of looking at suffering is called dukkha sambhava. And this is suffering as a inevitable aspect of life. Sambhava meaning something that exists in and of itself, that it's immutable, that you can't avoid, you can't run away from. And it's this idea, this perception of suffering that leads people to begin to practice. They haven't realized the truth of suffering, or this isn't the truth of suffering, but the Buddha included this in his explanation about the truth of suffering, because this is what leads people to understand the truth of suffering. When they start to see that life has suffering in it, and you can't avoid that. Hunger, thirst, the need to urinate and defecate, old age, sickness, death. These are all aspects of life that make suffering inevitable, something that you can't avoid, something that is present for everyone, and it's just a fact of life. So it's this kind of realization that helps people begin to ask questions, that if that's the case, how do I become free from suffering? How do I find the truth and the way out of suffering? And this is what Buddhism deals with. So Buddhism can be seen, rather than being a pessimistic sort of religion, it's a pragmatic sort of idea or teaching, in that just as a doctor teaches people or finds ways to help people free them from physical suffering by talking about their illnesses and by dealing with and analyzing and understanding their illnesses. The Buddha is likened to a doctor, a physician, because he talks a lot about illness, but it's more mental illness, and it's the mental causes of suffering. And as a result of talking about them, discussing about them, teaching about them, guiding people to practice in relation to them, he helps people become free from them. The third way of understanding suffering, that still isn't the truth of suffering, but is on the way there, is called dukkha lakkhana. So dukkha lakkhana is a change in perspective of how we look at suffering. Lakkhana means characteristic. So this is the teaching that all things that arise, all of their experiences in the world, all of the reality that we experience, is dukkha. And what this means, this doesn't mean that everything is unpleasant or everything is suffering. It means everything is suffering in the sense that all fire is hot. But fire is only hot when you hold on to it. If you don't go near it, if you don't get caught up in it, it's not suffering. And in a similar way, the idea of all experiences being dukkha is a different way of looking at it. To come and see that actually it's not the experiences that are the problem, it's us grabbing onto them. It's us holding on to them. It's us needing them and wanting them. And so the Buddha said further that not getting what you want is suffering. Getting what you don't want is suffering. Anything you wish for when you don't get that, when you don't have things your way, this is suffering. And so our chasing after things and clinging to things is what's suffering. Ultimately, the Buddha said, in regards to this third way of looking at things, that the five aggregates of clinging, this is the body, the feelings, memories, thoughts, consciousness, or recognition, thoughts, consciousness, these are all the aspects of experience, are dukkha, meaning our perception has to change, because we can't avoid old age, sickness, and death, so we have to start looking at reality in a different way, that actually anything can cause you suffering. Is dukkha in the sense that not worth clinging to, don't hold on to it. And this is what happens when you begin to practice mindfulness. As you progress through the stages of insight, you start to see deeper and deeper, more and more clearly, that nothing is worth clinging to. And it's this practice that leads you to see dukkha lakkhana. Everything you observe in the practice of mindfulness, you come to see is not worth clinging to. But finally you come to dukkha satya. So dukkha satya is the truth, or the understanding, kind of like an epiphany or a realization, when the mind understands or appreciates that nothing is worth clinging to. So it's the natural outcome of seeing the characteristic of suffering and everything, is that eventually you come to believe that everything is dukkha, meaning nothing is worth clinging to, meaning that the real problem is not the things themselves, but it's the clinging. And that's where we get to the second noble truth. So the first noble truth is the truth of the nature of suffering and what it is. Now, what we should do about the first noble truth, this is the kicca, right? Normally, when I ask this question, what do you think is the duty you must do in regards to suffering, people will even knowledgeable people about Buddhism will say, well, you should escape or become free from suffering. And that's not a bad answer, but it's not actually correct. It's not technically correct. And the problem is that if you take that as your practice to escape suffering, then you're back at square one, where you're running away from things, where you're trying to escape them. It's true that we want to become free from suffering, but the way to become free from suffering is actually not to run away from it. So the duty in regards to suffering is not to become free from it or run away from it or escape it. The duty is what the Buddha said is parinyaya, which means one should see it, we should understand it thoroughly or completely. Completely understand suffering. And so this relates to what I was saying about how one truly comes to see dukkha satya through the practice of mindfulness, is that one actually pays attention to these things that are dukkha, that are not satisfying, that cannot satisfy you, that are not worth clinging to. You have to show yourself that they're not worth clinging to by paying attention to them. So suffering is not something to run away from, it's something to approach, to face. If you face it, that's the only way you can come to understand it and the only true way to become free from it. The goal is freedom from suffering, it's not to suffer. However, we teach people mindfulness rather than giving them practice that distracts them from experience, distracts them from reality. We have them focus on reality, focus on experience. And by focusing on these very real aspects of experience and aspects of reality, people come to free them from those very things by familiarity, by knowledge, by understanding of them. When you come to see that it's actually not these things that are causing us suffering, it's our lack of understanding of them, it's our misperception of them. Oh, this is worth clinging to, oh, this will make me happy, when in fact there's nothing among the things that we experience that can make us happy, that can lead to satisfaction. So the kicca in regards to suffering is to fully understand it. And this is, of course, by paying attention, which we do through the practice of mindfulness. Katta, of course, relates to kicca. So once you have done that, in fact, once you have done that for the First Noble Truth, you have accomplished all the other four. So there's not much to be said about the third aspect. Just once you have accomplished the duty in regards to all four of them, then you can be said to be enlightened, truly accomplished in regards to the Four Noble Truths. The second noble truth, which I've already alluded towards, relates, of course, directly to the first one, the cause of suffering. And the idea of a cause of suffering, as I've said, implies that the suffering itself isn't the problem. There's something else that is causing you to suffer. The things that we experience are not the problem. The Buddha said the cause of suffering is tanha. Tanha meaning thirst, or more simply desire, craving. That which leads to attachment, which leads to clinging, which leads to needing, which leads to expectation, and eventually which leads to suffering when our expectations are not met, or when they require us to behave in ways that we wouldn't otherwise. So hurting other people, manipulating others to get what we want, lying, cheating, fighting, all of the things we do to get what we want are caused by this desire. And there are three kinds of craving or tanha. This is kama tanha, bhava tanha, and vibhava tanha. And the separation here, the division here, is a little bit artificial, but you can think of it as a sensual craving or an intellectual craving. So the idea is kama tanha means sensual desire, or sensual craving means related to things that you like or you want. This is simple to understand. You see something, it brings about craving. You want that or you like that. You hear something, you smell, you taste, you feel. Any of these experiences that you have, it evokes a feeling of desire, a feeling of craving. And as a result, you seek out that experience again and again, and you hurt yourself eating food that you shouldn't, or engaging in activities that lead to greater stress and suffering, and chasing after these things which require you to work hard and exert yourself in ways that cause stress and suffering as well. The first one. The second two, bhava tanha and vibhava tanha, you can think of as more intellectual kinds of cravings. So bhava tanha means desire for something to be, and vibhava tanha means desire for something not to be. So for example, someone who doesn't want to be reborn again, this is how the commentary talks about it, when you wish for when you die that there will be nothing, or you want to kill yourself thinking that there is nothing. This is vibhava tanha, a very extreme example. Bhava tanha would be the opposite, where you, when you die you want to go to heaven, for example. But these two are honestly in play constantly throughout our lives. Anytime you want something to be, wanting to be rich, wanting to be famous, wanting, liking the idea of something, this is bhava tanha. Not just wanting to be reborn, though that's of course the big one. Wanting to be something to be born in this life, wanting something to become, wanting to get a job, wanting to get a car or a house or this kind of thing. Not just the clinging to the sensuality, but clinging to the idea. Often clinging to conceit, feeling less, a lesser being because you don't have something. Maybe you feel less than someone, than other people because you don't have a job or you don't have a good job or you don't have this or you don't have that, and so you want this status or this sort of thing. And vibhava tanha is the opposite. Something exists in your life and you want to get rid of it. Or simply put, something exists in your experience and you want to get rid of it. Maybe you want to get rid of some physical feature, maybe some mental feature, wanting thoughts not to arise when you're thinking this about the past or the future, and you think, oh, I wish I didn't think this. This is vibhava tanha, wanting something not to be. Even wanting sensual experiences not to be. If you hear sounds and you want them not to be, too many sounds, too much noise, that sort of thing. Sights, sounds, smells, anything like this. Vibhava tanha and vibhava tanha is the desire for things to be and not to be. All of them, it boils down to wanting things to be other than what they are. Even with sensual craving, it leads you to want to attain and maintain these experiences. It brings you out of sync with reality or out of touch with reality, out of harmony with experience, because experience is unpredictable and isn't dependent on your wishes. So for a person who is free from craving of any kind, they have no issue with the way things are, whether reality goes this way or that way, they have peace because they don't have the need for it to be otherwise. And this is the essence of why there is suffering. Suffering is because we don't get what we want, and because we want things we don't have, and that sort of thing, because we're not content and at peace. So in other words, our experiences, our reality, isn't what causes us suffering, it's our perception and our reaction to reality. Us trying to change things, trying to fix things. It's why in mindfulness we tell people to do something quite unique, and that's to face and look at what is actually there. To try to cultivate a perception of things just as they are, without needing them for them to be otherwise, or needing for them to stay as they are. And learning how to be, how to appreciate that reality isn't going to listen to you anyway, and reality is unpredictable, and it's not worth clinging to. Nothing is worth clinging to. So this is the truth of the cause of suffering. Now the Gicca here, you don't in fact have to do anything in regards to the second one, because by understanding the first one clearly, you accomplish the second one, the second duty automatically. The second duty is to abandon craving. And why does it happen automatically? Because when you see that something is suffering, in other words, not worth clinging to, well, it says it itself. If you see that it's not worth clinging to, you obviously aren't going to cling to it. We only cling to things because we think they're worth clinging to. So when you see things as suffering, when you truly understand, and this is why suffering is so important to pay attention to, because again, when you truly understand it is suffering, you let go of it. And this is how we accomplish the kicca of the second one. The first and second are accomplished by the same practice. And again, katta means you have done it. Once you have freed yourself from suffering, well, then you attain the third noble truth. So the third noble truth is called the cessation of suffering. It's the opposite of the first one, you can say. It's the experience of cessation, what we often call nibbana. So there are different kinds of cessation. One who is practicing any sort of meditation often experiences very profound states of peace and calm. And it might seem like those are some kind of cessation of suffering. It's not technically true, because those things that you're experiencing are still suffering in the sense that they too are not worth clinging to. So true freedom from suffering is the freedom from any sort of experience whatsoever. It's the cessation, well, any sort of arisen experience. So it's an experience of true cessation where there is no seeing, no hearing, no smelling, no tasting, no feeling, no thinking, you aren't even aware or remember it. You only have complete cessation and an appreciation of it after the experience has ended. But this cessation of suffering comes about with the cessation of craving. So the definition of the cessation of suffering, is, as the Buddha said, is with the cessation of craving, there comes about the cessation of suffering. So as this happens in practice of mindfulness, you'll be paying attention to the body, to the feelings, to the thoughts, to the experiences, emotions, and that sort of thing. And you'll see more and more clearly that they are impermanent, unsatisfying, uncontrollable, until finally craving ceases. The seeking out comes to an end as a result of seeing the First Noble Truth. Nothing is worth clinging to. It's not just this thing is not worth or that thing is not worth. There comes about the realization or the perception. No thing is worth clinging to. And that moment, it's not intellectual. I can express it intellectually, but it's a visceral experience, this feeling that clinging is just not worth it, and then the mind enters into cessation. And there is experience of freedom from suffering. The benefits of freedom from suffering, the idea of the experience of Nibbana, is that it frees you from it frees you from the continuation of craving, because this epiphany that you have, or this perception of nothing being worth clinging to, is it's reaffirmed by the experience of Nibbana as being truly peaceful. After the experience of Nibbana, when one has experienced what we call Magganyana, Palanyana, one will have a sense of true peace that is unshakable and irrefutable. So one will have a sense that a deep sense that nothing is worth clinging to. One will have less of an attachment, less of a desire for things because of the comparison. Because Nibbana is truly peaceful and truly happiness. One will have this feeling of peace that carries on in one's life. But more importantly, that experience of craving or the experience of the understanding that nothing is worth clinging to is carried over and is experienced as the future freedom from the three types of tanha, of kama tanha, bhava tanha, and vibhava tanha. They are done away with and never return as a result of usually the consecutive attainment, repeated attainment of Nibbana will lead to deeper and deeper freedom from craving. So this is the cessation of suffering, and the duty in regards to it is simply to see it for yourself. Sacchikattabhang means one should see it for oneself. So again, this is just as one practices and becomes free from the delusion that things are worth clinging to, then eventually one enters into cessation. And the only thing I can say here is that it gives the idea that you have to see it to believe it, or you have to see it for yourself. I can talk about it and explain it. It doesn't sound necessarily appealing or interesting or profound until you understand that it involves the complete and utter removal of desire and attachment for anything. And until you realize it means the cessation without remainder of suffering and craving. So that's the kicca. Katta means you have done it. Once you have done it, then you've done what needs to be done. You attain Sotapanna, Sakkitagami, Anagami, and Arahant, of the four stages of enlightenment, only through this experience of Nibbana. This is what it means to become enlightened. And this is what it means to become free from suffering. The fourth noble truth, again, we have effect and then cause, and then the third one is effect, the fourth one is again the cause, is the path which leads to the cessation of suffering. And this is called the Eightfold Noble Path, which is the other probably most well-known teaching of the Buddha that you hear about, though newcomers might not be able to tell you what the eight parts is. It's generally something we hear about, that the Buddha taught the Eightfold Noble Path, the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Noble Path. The Eightfold Noble Path, usually we we focus very much on mindfulness as the key to the Eightfold Noble Path or as a key to the practice. So we simplify it and say, okay, undertake the practice of mindfulness. But you have to acknowledge that all eight parts of these are absolutely necessary and worth talking about, worth discussing. So I'll go over them in brief. I think later on we'll go into, in another lesson, we'll actually talk about these in more detail. But for example, you need right view. You can't expect to practice to become free from suffering. You can't expect to see clearly the nature of suffering unless you have right view. If you have the view, for example, that something or something else is going to free you from suffering, something external like God or heaven or belief or ritual, which you'd see in many sorts of religion, then it's very difficult for you to even want to or incline yourself towards the practice of mindfulness, let alone succeed at it. Even though you might undertake the practice of meditation, it will be all practiced completely the wrong way because you have no sense of why you're doing it or how to practice or the way in which to become free from suffering. Your idea of freedom from suffering is wrong if you have wrong view. Right view is important, right thought is important, so you can't be thinking all sorts of sensual thoughts or thoughts of ill will if you have a grudge against someone or that sort of thing, or delusion if you have conceit or arrogance or believe you're a great spiritual person. Some people come to practice but they already think they're great or enlightened. It's very hard for them to progress. You need right actions, so if you're killing or stealing or lying or cheating, it becomes very difficult for you to even sit down, let alone focus your mind. You need right speech, so you have to be careful not to get caught up in useless speech, but more extreme lying and gossiping and hurting others with your speech. All of these things will take away from your capacity to see clearly, let alone to calm your mind so that you'll be able to see clearly. You need right livelihood, so if you're engaged in livelihood that is unethical, killing or stealing or that sort of thing, manipulating others for your livelihood, harming others, again, of course, very difficult to focus the mind. You need effort, so you have to undertake the practice, for example, of walking meditation and sitting meditation. You can't just hope to become mindful and be mindful sort of as a form of osmosis. It's not just going to seep into you without dedicated practice. You need mindfulness. Mindfulness is the essence of our practice, because mindfulness means to recognize something just as it is. It means to grasp it properly. So not get caught up in the details or your thoughts about the thing or your reactions. The idea of sati, not exactly the English word mindfulness, but sati means to remember things. Not get caught up in the details or your extrapolations of what you think about things, but just to see them, which is why, of course, we teach people to say seeing and hearing, to remind yourself so that you remember. When you remind yourself, you will remember. When you feel pain, to say pain, so you don't get caught up in attachment to it. This is mindfulness or sati. Number eight, you need concentration. So as a result of the practice of mindfulness, you begin to focus your mind. You can't just be scattered, and this is why we do walking meditation focused on the foot and sitting meditation focused on the stomach, because this helps you calm down. But at the same, perhaps more importantly, you gain concentration by the use of what we call a mantra or this word. Now, normal mantras would be what you'd normally think of a mantra, where it's an idea, a god. You might have a mantra for God or a mantra for some object that you're focusing on. But here the mantra is just focused on the experience. So as I said, you say pain. And it's this which focuses your attention. The use of the mantra keeps the mind stable and focused and clear, which allows the freedom from the five hindrances which cloud the mind and keep you from seeing clearly. The Eightfold Noble Path, the path which leads to cessation of suffering, the fourth noble truth, the kicca, the duty to be done in regards to it, is the cultivation. So all eight factors should be cultivated. They're simply understood in a condensed form as sila, samadhi, and panya. So sila being ethics, samadhi being focus or concentration, and panya being wisdom. And they can be seen to go in that order. So whereas you need right view to start with, you only attain true right view at the end. So in the beginning, you learn about right way to practice, wrong way to practice, what is true and what is not true, but you learn it intellectually. And then you're told about sila, and you begin to practice sila. You're ethical, not killing or stealing or so on. And as a result, your mind is able to focus, and you're able to cultivate true sila, means keeping your body and your speech quiet and focused. And then you cultivate samadhi, which is concentration. As a result of that, you begin to see clearly, as I've said, about the three characteristics, and that leads you, that is the realization of wisdom, or panya. And these are the three trainings. So this is how we cultivate the Eightfold Noble Path, practically speaking, in a very brief, condensed form. And this is the Fourth Noble Truth. Once you've cultivated the Fourth Noble Truth, you can say that you've done what needs to be done, because the path leads directly, without veering off or going in another direction. Practiced directly, the path leads to the cessation of suffering. And so they can be seen to come together. The true path is the moment before you attain freedom from suffering, because up until that point, maybe you were sometimes on the path, sometimes off the path, but you know you're truly on the path at that last moment. That last moment is the moment which leads to the cessation of suffering. It's when the mind enters into cessation, because it sees nothing is worth clinging to. When you have that moment of seeing them and appreciating and perceiving that nothing is worth clinging to, that is called the attainment of the path, or becoming in line with the path. And then you enter into the cessation of suffering and free yourself from the craving and suffering of samsara. So the Four Noble Truths, really the essence of Buddhism. It's something that we study in various ways, and something that we try to incorporate into all teachings in some way or other. We're always talking about the Four Noble Truths, even though we may not name them such or enumerate them. We're always talking about the causes of suffering, that suffering comes from craving. We're talking about suffering, these things are not worth clinging to. We're talking about the path, and we're talking about the goal, which is the cessation of suffering. So, a very important teaching, something that we couldn't skip, we couldn't miss certainly, or else we wouldn't catch the core of the Buddha's teaching. The Four Noble Truths are the essence of Buddhism. So, that's the Dhamma for today.